Welcome to the last Wednesday of the week, the multi-tool of sports podcasts, where we bring you our highlights of the week in sport and occasionally get stuck into some meaty middles. On this week's show, Simon and Ben talk about something actually we probably haven't featured in a meaty middle for some time, actual football. English Premier League football. Ben and Simon get stuck into what's keeping them excited in the Premier League and elsewhere. So join me, Dan, with my colleagues Simon and Ben on this, the last Wednesday of the week. Good evening. I mean, good morning. Good day. Hi. Hi, gents.
Cooey.
Good day to you, sir.
Bright Stanley. That's the children's book, Bright Stanley. It's quite a good read, but it goes, "Cooey, it's me."
That doesn't sound sinister at all.
Many nephews, horrifying. As you know. And I think that's what they say, where they've got it from. Dan,
maybe.
It's hard to be cheery in this world, but sport is there. And there's been so much happening in the last hour alone.
Yeah, I mean, listeners of the show, and we've had a bit of an uptick in listenership, so all our new listeners, very warm welcome to you wherever you are listening from. We hope that you're finding something you're enjoying. Those that were listening last week will know that we focused quite heavily on sport's response to the invasion of Ukraine, which of course has no signs of slowing down or stopping yet, as Russia seemed to be doubling down on war crimes and atrocities on the daily. Sport is going to run out of things they can do at some point. But Simon, of course, I think you want to talk about Chelsea a bit later on, which is a fairly direct result of the invasion of Ukraine with its own intricacies as well. But as Ben says, whilst it's easy to focus on the horrors that are happening, there is, of course, many other things happening in the world of sport around the world. So we are going to get stuck into some of those highlights from across the spectrum of sport. Ben, let's pick up with you. You're top of the sheets. Murray donations. Is someone bribing Andrew Murray?
Yeah, basically that's what we're getting here. It's real dark tennis news. I always go first now in our podcast. I think when you start mixing it up, Dan.
Maybe, you guys write the sheet, so you know.
Yeah,
it's there for taking.
I'm always Simon, eager.
Simon,
talk
be more
about
assertive.
Tennis.
I don't need to, because yeah, he goes first, but when you've got the better content, you can go whenever the hell you like. So I'll let him have the easy victory.
You need to set your Google Doc foo out.
Sorry. Wow, there was just three words I didn't understand. Highlights. This is where I'm at. I'm going to give you a quick Andy Murray update. I think this should just be a weekly Andy Murray segment, because I'm falling in love with this guy. Andy Murray has pledged his entire 2022 season winnings to help Ukraine, specifically helping charities dealing or helping children. Over there, the reports coming out of Ukraine are pretty stark. Today we heard things of children dying of dehydration, some real horrible stuff, a sort of humanitarian catastrophe we're all watching unfold. Now, in terms of his game on the actual tennis court, he's reteamed up with Ivan Lendl, okay, a coach he won a couple of slams with. So Ukraine can expect a huge chunk of cash from the morally outstanding Andy Murray. I think many sporting stars will follow suit, and it's not unusual that Andy's first. He's a truly incredible man, a great ambassador for tennis. I'll never lessen it. I think it is actually a duty of people earning that much money to help where they can. So I actually look forward to seeing more follow suit, Dan. I don't know if you guys have heard of any others offering donations or getting involved in the cause.
I haven't personally, but we did, of course, talk at length last week of Ukrainian sports, athletes supporting the cause by going back to their country and picking up a gun.
Well, yeah.
So there's those with the duty and the sort of feeling of honour to support their country and their people, and then there's those that can't do that for whatever reason. We'll bring out the checkbook, and I think anything they can do, they should do. I completely agree, Ben.
It's worth saying that Andy Murray isn't legally allowed to go over there, because there was actual confirmation from some army boss in the UK, I don't know the names of these titles, saying that there'd been 100,000 applications for Brits to go and help the fight. And obviously that would count as us getting involved. I know we're not going to get into talking about that tonight, but yeah, I'm just saying, you know, that's what Andy can do is give away. It's a whole year income. That's an immense commitment, and well done, Andy.
I do believe that's actually serving military personnel have been banned from going across.
Yes, it was.
So that's a slightly different kettle of fish. So civilians can still go across. But
and are invited, weren't they? Zelensky was inviting a special sort of battalion or whatever they call it was set up.
I thought it was like a foreign legion, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
J.K. Rowling apparently is donating. The royals. There's quite a few people. Andy Murray is not the first, but I mean, good on him. And I mean, that's a very generous offer for all of his winnings or whatever for the year. So, I mean, that's fantastic. But yeah, I think a lot of people throughout entertainment and everything else, anyone with a lot of money seems to be donating. And we will talk about Roman Abramovich later on, a little soft tease for you there.
And also slightly more... Not quite so clear cut, is it, his potential donation to the cause or otherwise. Ben, what else you got for us then?
Okay, so we're going to go from one absolutely exemplary tennis star to an absolute... Now, the word I wrote down on my notes here, we're not going to be allowed to broadcast. Honestly...
I'll get shut down by Apple immediately and Spotify.
We should put an explicit warning on this episode because this man... Alexander Zverev is just an absolute wanker. He attacked an umpire a few weeks ago after losing a doubles game. He hit the umpire chair with his tennis racket with this scary aggression, okay? Hitting it a few times, nearly hitting the leg of the umpire himself.
I saw umpire, that. It was violent.
Violent. We're not talking, you know, we're not talking verbal outrages. I've seen verbal outrages. I've seen Serena Williams and John McEnroe, for instance. You know, the chalk flew up. Serena going off at the umpire at the US Open. I won't excuse them, but I can understand the heat of battle. You know, maybe you exchange a word or two that you're not proud of, but these were not words. It was an attack. Okay, he's been handed, get this, a suspended sentence. A $25,000 fine. This is a man who's worth tens of millions. Except he hasn't really, because it's withheld, provided he doesn't get another unsportsmanlike or verbal physical abuse code in the next 12 months. So basically, the International Tennis Federation, have seen this and gone, okay, if you're nice for the next 12 months, we'll all forget about it. Man, I mean, Twitter's obviously going wild about this. I was vocal on Twitter earlier today saying he should be banned for a year, tennis, and then moving on. I thought it was good to show you the show, talk, say, what Zverev did versus what Andy Murray did, to kind of juxtapose against a top tennis player, exemplary professional, and this knobhead, Alexander Zverev, rather, not Sasha, his brother, I should say. Did you all see it? Did you see it, Si?
No, I'm just Googling it right now. I'm very, very interested.
Yeah, real aggressive. I'm very interested to know, actually, if this is going to be on Serving to Survive or if they will mention this on the Netflix documentary.
It was really uncomfortable watching.
Yeah,
because
I didn't like
of
it.
How close you say he was. I mean, he was close enough that in any regular situation, the umpire would have been well within their rights to jump down and defend themselves and, like, you know... But they were cool as, like, full respect to that umpire. They were just like, you know, brushed it off. But yeah, to get away with essentially a slap on the wrist and going, oh, naughty boy, don't do it again is a real piss take.
It's a real odd one. And often tennis, the International Tennis Federation will protect their best players. I know it's a horrible sentence. But Serena Williams actually responded saying, I think she would have been put in jail if she did that. Maybe there is, you know, some kind of favorable treatment. I don't know why. There's also an ongoing claim of abuse, physical abuse with him and his partner. So listen, I'm not going to stoke the fire with any more of that, but one to watch out for. He is not liked on Twitter, that's for sure.
That's a good metric for character, Twitter. That very reliable metric. Ben, You're talking my language now. I just saw the words "until lights out," and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Dan, I've got some questions for Si on American football. I really have, and I can't wait to hear from him in a moment. But I just want to have a couple of sentences, if that's okay, Si. I don't like having this many Sundays in a row without watching Formula One. It's not cool, okay? I don't like it. And thankfully, we only have one more Formula One free weekend until Bahrain. And it's fair to say, Dan, the bitching has started exceptionally early this year. Christian Horner has now placed the entire blame of Michael Massey's failed career and sacking on Toto Wolff and Team Mercedes. Obviously, the Merck team have yet to respond, but I think they will in Bahrain when Ted Kravitz gets that microphone up in their face. The cars are all over the shop. We've no idea really who's leading the pack. Reports suggest McLaren may have a package capable of challenging. If they do, who's their number one driver? Is Ricciardo finally going to be backed? There are so many narratives. We're not going to get into it now. I just wanted to say to all the listeners, and you, Dan, like, listen, we're so close. We are so close to lights out. Formula One season 2022.
Can smell the rubber. And of course, no Russian Grand Prix, but it looked like the... I've already forgotten it because I wasn't going to mention it, so I put it out of my mind. What was the Grand Prix that looks to be picking up the pieces?
Was it the European? Is it Valencia they bought in?
No, it wasn't. I'll find it for later.
Yeah, you find out. Yeah. I mean, you also swore there, Dan. I don't know if really that was needed.
We always put this down as an explicit podcast.
Oh, well, I could have called Alexander Zverev a fucker then.
I mean, yeah, we always do, Ben.
Okay, I take it back.
I think that's it's only when we interview people that it doesn't go down as explicit because our interviewees are always too polite.
Okay. Zverev, not good. And later in the show, we'll know which Grand Prix is overtaking Sochi.
All right, you move on then. You've got a list of questions for Si.
This is going to move on to your section, Si. The first one, just a real quick one on the UK this year. The teams have been announced that are coming to the UK. We're talking NFL now. Green Bay Packers in England. I'm pumped. I'm absolutely pumped about that. And I certainly should be trying to get tickets. Why is that big news today, Si?
Well, absolutely huge NFL franchise. They're also the only franchise that has never been over here for a regular season game, I believe. It might even be any game whatsoever. So, it's massive news. They are going to go to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, as are the New Orleans Saints for another game. And then we also have the Jacksonville Jaguars, of course, as always, who will be playing at Wembley. Going on from that as well, they're actually spanning even further. So there's going to be a game in New Mexico involving the Arizona Cardinals and a game in Germany in Bayern Munich Stadium where the Tampa Bay Bucks will be playing. So, yeah, some really exciting games. We don't know the opponents yet. Knowing the NFL, it will probably be absolutely terrible teams that go because your revenue is directly affected by which team plays and blah blah blah, so they never bring their big games because they'll get the big games in their own stadiums back home and make more money from it. So it'll be someone like the Texans or something, but looking forward to it. Hopefully get some tickets this year. Maybe we can broadcast live while the game's going on, an actual podcast in mid-game. Dan would love it
from the actual Spurs stadium.
Yes, on the halfway line as they boot the ball over the top of us.
Listen, I'm absolutely involved. I know we're going to come on to your section. I feel like I'm taking Dan's segue moment here, but I want to ask... Thank you. Before we get on to some really interesting NFL news, I want to ask about something that's maybe not so great. Dan, NFL, not Formula One, sorry. Calvin Ridley, okay, season ban for betting on a game. I believe he wasn't playing it. Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm completely fencing here. But major NFL suspensions right now. We've got Ray Rice beating his fiance, 2-game ban. Adrian Peterson, child abuse, 6-game ban. Greg Hardy beating his girlfriend, 10-game ban reduced to 4 games. Ezekiel Elliott hitting women, 6 games. And Calvin Ridley put some money on a game he's not involved in, is banned for 17 games. Now, listen, I've given you the facts there. Obviously, I've given it in a bit of insinuation. Are the NFL crazy or are they stamping out what could be a bad situation?
I mean, you have to protect the integrity of the sport. So you see in whatever, whether it's Premier League football or whatever, there's a real hardline approach to gambling. Having said that, I do agree with you. He actually did bet on the Falcons, but he bet on them to win, which usually isn't the way that if you're doing some match fixing or anything like that, that goes that way, because you can't really fix it so your team wins unless you've bought the other team completely, which would probably be a bit expensive. He only bet on something like eight, I think it's like 15 teams or 15 games or something like that throughout the season. He took some time away last year for personal reasons, which may or may not be anything to do with gambling. So he wasn't even a member of the Falcons actively at that point anyway. So it's all just a bit crazy. Like, yes, I can appreciate integrity of the game and protecting it, but I think there has to be some caveats in this law. And as you say, yeah, you've got players who have actively been prosecuted or whatever for domestic violence, for carrying weapons, for drug abuse, who get less time than someone who bets on something like 15 games over a season.
It seems, so the message to someone like me who obviously does not know NFL, it's they're more interested in protecting revenue than the general wider public.
The NFL and in the image some ways, of that. Yeah. The NFL in some ways is one of the most backwardly corrupt and morally voided thing within the world. It's that you can it totally picks up stands on what we probably think is the wrong stands to take, as it were, in it, and it does lead to some bizarre situations like this.
And the NFL has also recently financially backed gambling. So the NFL is completely tied to gambling. Gambling in the US is exploding in popularity. I mean, the numbers coming out, I actually talked about it at the end of last season on the show, the, you know, crazy numbers of bettors and gamblers over there, and obviously the problems that ensue with that. Dan, you've not segued from my highlights to size, so
it's
I'm just going to
let it happen. It's flowing.
I'm going to fight back to you because I want a good segue. We've not had one yet today.
Let it flow, let it flow.
Oh God, he segues with Frozen.
NFL, you know, those never bothered me anyway.
You know, the listeners we had for a very short period of time, they've now left.
Gone. Yeah. NFL, Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, wow. What a segue. Beautiful. Beautiful, Dan. So, Aaron Rodgers. So, I thought this was going to be a very, very slim show for things to talk about. And I'm just literally now talking about NFL continually. But Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, has signed a new deal with the franchise. There's talk about him leaving. He's now going to be making roughly $50 million a year, which is a nice chunk of change. A four-year deal. They've also franchise tagged Devontae Adams as well. So they've bought back their best wide receiver. So Packers really going for it. But big thing that was going to be talked about throughout the offseason is now sorted. So Aaron Rodgers is staying in Green Bay and making a significant chunk of change as the highest paid player in the league currently.
Yeah, that he has refuted that contract on Twitter, but people are, he says it's not 50 million, but people are saying that it could even be a bit more, which is why he's maybe refuting it. But either way, he is the close to or not going to be the highest paid player in the league, which is pretty impressive. Yeah, and they've obviously, Packers wide receiver Devontae Adams, $20.1 million. So they've got the two big hitters. And the franchise tag, that finishes tonight. Is that right?
Yes, that finishes now. There's a few other guys, but Devontae Adams is the big name on that list. You know, a few tight ends and a few players like that. So not any major, major stars being locked up that I've seen apart from Devontae Adams, but some really, really good players. So moving on from that, because I feel like we need to move on. And trusting Dan's segues today, it's probably best if I just do it. I don't have a segue, but I'm just going to carry on. Russell Wilson, formerly quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, has now been traded to the Denver Broncos for what feels like almost like a absolute blockbuster record deal of two first round picks, two second round picks, a fifth round pick, and three players. So an absolute blockbuster trade. It's really going to kick off the NFL off-season, and we've got free agency next week, which will probably be my only thing to look forward to on my list. But no, an absolute monster of a deal, and it puts Denver Broncos in a position to contend immediately. Ben, what's your thoughts?
It's huge, absolutely huge. The three players there, quarterback Drew Lock, tight end Noah Fant, who some people like, although his stats are fairly poor, and is a defensive linebacker, Shelby Harris, who I believe is quite a good football player.
Very good.
Like you say, it's an absolutely massive deal. For me, the two first-round picks, two second-round picks, are they following the Rams method in saying, listen, it's win now mode. Let's give away these picks. Let's get Russell Wilson in. The Broncos have now got this incredible squad with Judy. I was looking through all the players earlier. I mean, just a strong offensive line. And we'll sort of win now mode and just worry about the future. I mean, I don't know. Russell Wilson's amazing. It feels like a good trade for Denver. But then I'm kind of thinking, well, actually, they got a lot. They got a lot for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good trade for both teams. Seahawks were a team that needed to rebuild. They were absolutely awful last season, as was Russell Wilson for a lot of it after a bad injury. Denver were always seen as a team who were just a quarterback away. They had Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater, both players who were of limited quality, to be perfectly honest. So now there's no excuses, and Denver, I think, are going to be a really, really good side, because even though they've given away some good players, they've still maintained the core of what that makes that team good. So I think both teams needed to go direction. As you say, the Rams method, the blueprint of the Rams, suggests that some teams have to, if you've got the squad around it, get that star quarterback and you can push you over the edge, as the Rams proved. And for the Seahawks, who had very few picks, had very little money available and were basically treading water, they needed to go into a full rebuild. So I think it's good for both sides.
Yeah, I'm sort of super looking forward to listening to shutdown coverage next episode, because I think also the Cowboys have restructured Dak Prescott and Zach Martin's contracts. They freed up 20 mil cap space, so they're going probably into the free agency. There's heaps happening, like you said, a couple of the franchise tags so far. Chris Godwin, big one, massive money. Gesicki, Schultz. Yeah, there's been, you know, some interesting
Orlando
players
Brown,
there. So
Jesse Bates. Yeah, so really, really big players who've been locked up. So exciting times. And it's, I think for the cheap plug there, Ben, it will be discussed a lot more detail on shutdown coverage, which actually is released on Thursday. So looking forward to dissecting it with Ed. And hopefully you guys will be able to have a little bit more knowledge.
So, don't stop there, Si. You've got more to talk about.
I've got one more. Because everything's changed around, it's very hard for me to remember where I am. So I kind of cut out the combine, so I didn't want to make this an NFL podcast. But last one to talk about goes back to football, which we'll obviously discuss in a lot more detail in the middle part of the show. So Kick It Out president, I'm going to have to look at his name now and actually try and read my writing, Sanjay Bhandari, mentions and highlights that the biggest anomaly in British football is the lack of South Asian football players. So if you look at grassroots level, there's something like 8-10% of all players are of South Asian descent, which is quite a large number, actually. Also, that's roughly the sort of population size of this country. And yet we have only got one player in the Premier League who's actually made a Premier League appearance this year of South Asian descent, who is Hamzy Chowdhury, whose mother, I believe, or father, is Bangladeshi. So he's the only player from that entire area. So there is no representation. And as Mr. Bhandari says, it is a massive anomaly in sports, biggest anomaly in the whole country, really. So very interesting. It'd be very interesting to see where he is. But it's something that has been an issue going back a long time. I remember Harpal Singh coming through at Leeds, and he was supposed to be the big hope for South Asians, and he never made a first-team appearance, as far as I'm aware. So a big issue within that within the whole of British football. And another thing that probably needs to be investigated further.
Is this, I mean, they're sort of kicking out a president. I don't necessarily know what his job entails. Obviously, I know, you know, kicking racism out of the game, which also covers getting, you know, representing nations in the Premier League. South Asia, are we looking at India, Thailand, Bangladesh, Pakistan, perhaps?
Yeah, it's more the Asian subcontinent. So you're talking okay. Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, those sorts of nations.
Yeah, I mean
Sri Lanka.
That's tricky, very tricky. But we have a lot of sporting exports going the other way, especially to the Indian Premier League in cricket. We have a lot of British players that have played over there over the years. Of course, we actually lost a legend of the game, which I don't think any of us put in the show notes, which is a shock. And we probably should mention.
Well, yeah, that'd be the first time we mentioned cricket.
Yeah, but I think it's important to mention Shane Warne.
Sure.
He's one of the players that I actually loved watching. A true legend of the game. I think he's got the second most wickets of all time behind Mathai Muralitharan. And yeah, he played in the Indian Premier League himself, I believe. So yeah, we have a lot of exports going that way and not a lot of imports coming this way. So maybe that is something. I don't know how they look at it. Do they? I don't know how they do that. Listen, I wouldn't even begin to give you an example on this. Have you read anything about that, sir?
Not really. I said it's something I'm kind of highlighting, but it's something I think we should all probably look into a greater deal. But it does seem odd that you have such a large representation at grassroots level, but it doesn't transfer to actual full first team football. Now, obviously, I'm sure there'll be people out there yelling and saying, well, you know, they all play cricket or anything like that. But that doesn't seem to actually be the case. And that's actually more of a stereotype than actually something that's shown in the data. So I think that is an interesting situation and something that definitely needs to be thought about in greater detail and find out why this might be. Talking briefly about Shane Warne, yeah, I mean, he is an absolute legend of the sport, a controversial character, quite a few accusations levelled at him at various times, but a massive personality and an absolutely fantastic cricketer. So a sad loss for the game and, you know, only 52, which is nothing these days.
Yeah, very young age, RIP to him. We're going to wrap up this section. I've just got one thing to mention because we haven't really talked about it a lot over the last couple of weeks, and that is, of course, the Paralympics, the Winter Games over in Beijing. And Britain, you know, we've got 5 medals. We're doing all right. All 5 from the Paralpine skiing, including 1 gold. So, you know, we're getting some bling coming back. But who's sitting at number 2? What country is sitting at number 2?
Ukraine.
Either of you know. Ukraine.
Ukraine.
Absolutely smashing it on the medal table above Canada, which is remarkable. It's really nice to see those athletes get that opportunity and that chance to stand proudly, and I'm sure emotionally, with their flag as they do. That finishes on the 13th. So, yeah, check in, tune in. Lots more excitement to come in the Paralympics. All right, that wraps up the highlights. So if you've got anything you want to share with us, if the boys have said anything that you want to get in on, then do find us on Twitter or Instagram at WednesdayPod on either. Okay, we're going to get stuck into football. And I think it has genuinely been many weeks since we properly got into a bit of a football topic. So just before I hand the reins over, I just want to say, if you are new to the show or you're listening and you haven't yet subscribed or followed us or done any of those weird terminology things across all the podcast platforms, then do it. It really helps us share the message, spread the word and tell your friends. So thanks for doing that in advance. Right, Si, Ben. Who are we starting with? Ben, you're at the top of the sheet, is that right? I don't want to make presumptions.
You know, listen, I'll start here because I know Si's got a couple of points to come in. We're talking about football, soccer ball. I'm going to call it soccer ball tonight in honour of Jesse March, the new manager who insists on calling it football. He's American. I wish he'd call it soccer and be American.
I mean, the real life Ted Lasso.
Yeah, and I don't like these comparisons with Ted Lasso being shunned, Dan, because Ted Lasso is one of the nicest humans ever to have been imagined on screen. And
it's true. I think
he's a legend. I think Jesse
Have you
March,
seen it yet, Simon?
No, I still haven't seen it. I've even got Apple
TV.
That's
the whole
video
point of getting Apple TV, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's heartwarming, Si.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. It's just got so much on, guys. You know,
careful,
being off,
Simon.
Being
it'll
off
make
with
you
COVID.
Feel, it'll it's make just, you feel good. Do be yeah, careful.
I, I mean, we're talking. I wanted to kind of interject here because I don't love Andy Murray. I think one dour man and another dour man like myself would not make a particularly good couple, as it were. So I cannot profess my love for Andy Murray. But yes, I will check it out. I need to check out. I think it would be very good.
I like how you waited till the meaty middle to say you don't like Andy Murray. But listen, two dowers make a right. Listen, if he donates his whole yearly winnings to Ukraine, then fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Now, yeah, so we're going to obviously talk about soccer ball, football. I'm looking at the top and the bottom of the league. The reason I wanted to talk about football this weekend is because I watched a match. This week, because I watched a match at the weekend. Okay. Manchester City. Okay. They are immense. Truly. I'm going to say this now, and I'm going to give you, Simon, 5 seconds to riposte. Okay. Manchester City Football Club, circa 21-22, are the best team to ever have graced the Premier League. 5 seconds.
Bloody hell. I mean, you could argue the Arsenal Invincible side were probably better. I mean, they didn't lose a game, but I suppose the quality is better now than it's ever been, well, for the last few years anyway. So it's a very difficult one to argue with for 5 seconds, to be honest. But yeah. And imagine if they got Harry Kane instead of Jack Grealish in the summer. Just think.
Exactly. They could have been, I mean, especially Harry Kane now, who's kicking on. And I'll mention Spurs in a little bit, actually. But yeah, Manchester City, they dismantled Manchester United at the weekend to go back 6 points clear. We've talked about this kind of cat and mouse chase between Manchester City and Liverpool. Liverpool constantly chasing. I don't know how long we're going to continue chasing. It's pretty difficult when City just keep grinding out wins. Liverpool are literally winning every game at the moment, but just can't get within touching distance. That's how good Manchester City are. The two teams at the top of the division still have to play each other. Of course, excitable Liverpool faithful world around believe we're going to win that game at the Etihad on the 10th of April. I'm here to tell you, Si and Dan, it's not going to happen. Manchester City are immense. The way they played at Old Trafford was sensational. Dominant, exceptional passing of the ball. Even Grealish looked like a different player. Fit, healthy, was quick to pass. He's been pretty poor since he signed for them. I will say that. I'll happily put my hands up and say I don't think they should have signed Jack Grealish, but he looked brilliant. Foden is one of the talents of the century, this lad. Every time I watch him touch the boy, silky. He's got vision, quick shooting. And Bernardo Silva, I think he's the best player in the Premier League at the moment. I don't think there's anything this guy can't do. And then you've got De Bruyne, who's starting to get back to his best. They were ruthless. They've got winners all over the pitch. And it's the only reason I want to talk about them today, because I watched that match at Old Trafford against, yes, Manchester United. Okay, the last 20 minutes is not what you'd come to expect from a home side at Old Trafford. But they have their own deep, deep problems, but the gulf between the sides were stark. I don't know if you saw that match, Si, but a quick quote from Klopp, because obviously Liverpool manager, said this week, if it wasn't for Liverpool these last few years, then City would be wrapping the title up by March every year. He's absolutely right. City are 16 points ahead of Chelsea, 21 points ahead of fourth placed Arsenal. So only 12 games left. I mean, what more can we say about this Manchester City side under Pep Guardiola?
Oh, they're just amazing. I mean, you could argue that well, when you have effectively unlimited finances, it does make things a lot easier. But at the same point, they've managed to luck into a manager and put a style together. And you could say that's the big difference between Man United and Man City. The kind of, not a riposte, because you kind of touched on it before, but Man United were seemingly pretty bad, to be honest. And the analysis after the game was entirely centered on Man United's failings, with an argument between Roy Keane and Gary Neville et al. So very awkward situation there as well. But it's not looking good for Man United. Ronaldo literally ruled out what felt like minutes before the game as well, and is now back in training again, apparently after having a hip issue. All is not rosy in the garden. Maguire, there's references to Maguire, the team being very split on whether Maguire is good enough right now to be playing in the first team. And I probably would say no, he's not. He's been absolutely woeful for a while. maybe he's just being exploited too much. Maybe the team isn't playing to his strengths, but it's not looking good. And Man United could be on the kind of edges of once again not qualifying for the Champions League, which seems to be becoming too much of a habit within the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Manchester United are currently 2 points, a couple points behind Arsenal. Arsenal have 3 games in hand. I mean, there's a big gulf, I think, actually, opening between Spurs, Arsenal and Man United. Man United, for me, are struggling to hang on to sixth place. Wolves, you know, no slouch. West Ham, still a very good Premier League side under David Moyes. Rumour has it, touching on that Ronaldo point, that he was named on the bench and he was not happy with that and he refused to be on the bench. Rangnick's obviously denied this, but denied it in an odd way. He said, I have to trust my medical staff. Weird sort of thing to say. I don't know. But yeah, I wanted to mention the top of the table without sort of bringing Liverpool into that, because I don't think we'll catch them now. Watching that game, I was actually frightened by how incredible this City side were. And they've got another couple of years, I believe, with Guardiola, the same as Klopp. And I see only Liverpool or City, probably City, winning the next 2-3. Very, very good. I'm going to segue onto the bottom half of the table by just talking about the bottom half of the table.
That's not how a segue works, but
okay.
But you've done it.
That was beautifully done.
To be fair, like, that was a relegation worthy segue.
Yes. Oh, you are good at these segues. You are so good at them. Even when it's soccer ball, we're talking about.
And also, it shows I was listening.
Okay, we're gonna.
Which is unusual. I like at best, let's be honest.
Yeah, I like how surprised you are that you're listening.
I know, right?
It's shock and horror. Listen, Everton. They need to be worried. I said a couple episodes ago that this could be one of the great relegation scraps of all time. Norwich revitalized with a new manager. Watford. Now with the Wily Owl at the helm, Burnley, yes, I'm referring to Roy Hodgson. Burnley, Dyche has a new striker,
Ginger Mourinho.
Weghorst. Leeds United, Ted Lasso at the helm, okay, winless in 7, yikes, and Everton, Lampard in the dugout, they got demolished by Spurs. I mean, literally demolished by Spurs. They sit a single point above the relegation zone. Si, I'm going to give you 3 seconds to riposte this one. Greatest relegation scrap in history.
Wow, that's so tough, because, I mean, we've still got, as you said, we've got like 12 games left. How can you say? It could literally be all sewn up with 3 or 4 games left. But, I must say myself, must be a month ago that the relegation fight was between 4 teams. And interesting, by the way, I've gone very nasally because COVID has blocked my nose up. So I do apologize if I do sound very weird.
That's okay.
But at the same point, there's a name that you didn't mention in that list, and that's Newcastle. So that was a name that we talked about as one of the 4 teams, along with Burnley, along with Norwich and Watford, as teams that were likely to go down. And now Newcastle aren't even in that race. Leeds at that point was something like 9 points away from the relegation zone, and Everton were even further away. So it's really stark how badly these teams and how badly the free fall of these teams has kind of come on. I think, you know, in answer to your question in a very roundabout way, I think it has the potential to be a very, very fascinating race. But you never know, because all of these teams have the ability to just lose every game and no one be any the further or any the wiser. So we'll find out how it goes. But very exciting, and very exciting to see how anything develops, because I think there will be some twists in the tail coming from. Because Brentford aren't safe either. Brentford are another team that are... I think they won at the weekend, but they hadn't won many games for quite a while either. So a very, very interesting race hotting up, as you said.
Yeah, those two teams you mentioned there, Newcastle and Brentford, one thing they've done, and maybe you could count Burnley with this as well, is they've made signings that might pull them out of the relegation zone. Brentford made the big play signing, okay, Christian Eriksen. The player you remember from the Euros, Dan, who had the terrible, frightening heart attack on the pitch.
Yeah, that little video was funny, yeah.
Yeah, he assisted a goal. He's absolutely brilliant. Si, do you think that was a good move?
It's a dangerous move, both for the player and for the team to a certain extent. But if he's been checked out by medical professionals and they're happy with his health, then by all means, it can be a fantastic move. There was actually a funny video the weekend as well. I don't know if you saw it, where Williams of, is it Brad Williams of Norwich?
Yeah, Brandon.
Brandon got pulled to the ground, and then when he was going to kick off and push the guy to the floor, and when he realised it was Christian Eriksen, he gave him a hug, which was very, very funny to see. But yeah, it's a feel-good story, and good luck to him, because the guy obviously didn't want to give up on his dream. I mean, he's only, was he 30 now? He's not an old guy. And yeah, as long as he can do it safely, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think there's some excellent games to come, and the relegation fight, it's good that there's a good relegation fight, because it gets people involved in some games that maybe wouldn't necessarily be in the public eye. And also it pumps a couple of these games towards the half five kickoffs or the half 12 kickoffs. I think they can sort of change these things around and have a bit of a relegation scrap on television, especially if City walk away with the title in the coming weeks. Burnley play Brentford this weekend. What a huge game. If Burnley win that, suddenly the bees get dragged into that race as well. Leeds, Watford and Norwich all in action tomorrow if you're listening to this. So, yeah, get your eyes on the top and the bottom of the Premier League. It's all going off.
And where it's probably not going to be, teams that aren't going to get talked about in relegation but are potentially up for being sold are Chelsea, Simon.
What an odd segue that was.
I know, I couldn't make it work. I didn't know how to make it work.
I didn't know where you were going with it.
Here I am.
I appreciate the effort. Yeah. Right. So, Chelsea, we touched on it a little bit last week in our Ukraine show and talking about how sport can make a difference within the crisis, the invasion, as it were. But Roman Abramovich, we kind of talked about it a bit last week. There were rumours about him being potentially putting Chelsea up for sale. He'd already put the stewardship into the hands of the Chelsea Trust, a charity owned by Chelsea Football Club. And there was a bit of a palaver as to whether they were going to accept that charge, as it were. But then literally the next day, it was actually confirmed by Roman Abramovich himself that he was, in fact, putting the team up for sale. Very, very interesting turn of developments. He's obviously petrified with the idea of sanctions and has actually said that he is going to put all the proceeds he makes from the sale to victims of the war in the Ukraine. So the guy is basically going on a charm offensive as best he can to try and avoid any sanctions from any countries within Europe or America or wherever. So yeah, he's doing his best. So interestingly enough, obviously, it's not often a very successful team does get sold because of the fact that, if you're a successful team, you tend to make a lot of money. Chelsea have won in Roman Abramovich's lifetime something like 18 trophies, including Premier Leagues, League Cups, Champions Leagues. So they've been a very, very successful team. I think, was it 2005 he bought them? So he's been in charge for quite a few years. But you know, he's made a good living out of it. So talk of being up for in the region of about 2.5 to 3 billion pounds for the sale. So very, very, very large sum of money. Kind of put into perspective, what was your local team Southampton sold for? Was it 100 million, Ben?
Yeah, it was literally about 100 million. That was a great signing, and Southampton are playing some good football right now. I read that Conor McGregor threw his name into the hat, although I don't think he has 2.8 billion. I think that was a bit of a show.
So, yeah, I mean, the guy is all about showmanship and everything like that. I think he has no thoughts of buying. I think he just wants to get as much attention as he can because he is always mouthing off about something. I can't stand Conor McGregor. I know people say characters make things interesting, but he is such a mouthy person. I know we're not supposed to swear on this
well
show
saved.
Now.
Well saved. Well saved.
Because it's a non-explicit show, as I'm being told.
But he's a great self-promoter. That's one thing I'll say about that man.
So what makes this more interesting is that usually you would have a large number of effectively billionaire oligarchs, for example, you know, Russian owners, you'd have Chinese owners. So we've got none of that because of Chinese government crackdowns on money leaving the mainland and a small to-do in Ukraine, obviously putting Russian businessmen into a bit of a shadow, as it were, you know, with all the sanctions of all these various billionaires. So you're limited to where you're coming from. So you've basically got America. So there's about 13 or 14 American sports owners, owners of the Sacramento Kings, I think New York Jets owner, the Dodgers owner, Chicago Cubs owner, have all thrown their name into the hat. Whether any of them actually seriously putting a bid in is to be fact-checked nearer to the time, because I think is it the 15th of March they've got to put their name into the hat? So, you know, it could be a bidding war between multiple owners, or it could be one or two people, because, you know, 2.5 to 3 billion pounds is a significant chunk of change. So it's going to be very interesting. There's another bid, I believe, from Saudi Arabian owners, from a Saudi media group, which I'm sure we met with a little bit of trepidation after the Newcastle bid. So, yeah, Ben, what's your thoughts? Any thoughts on Chelsea?
I mean, on that immediate thought is, how good are the Saudi Arabian public fund having bought Newcastle and only 6 months later the shining diamond of Chelsea and Stamford Bridge come? Abramovich was partway through putting together a billion-dollar stadium in central or south London, Chelsea. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what his ties are to Russia. I don't think he's that friendly with Russia, in all honesty, Abramovich. I think he was actually banned from the country for a few years at a time when he sold some oil fields across to the state. On China, I will mention there that China have banned the viewing of banned broadcast, sorry, of Premier League football games. So not only are they, like you say, the sanctions on the money leaving the country, they don't even play the football there, so no one's going to come over there from and buy Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, in terms of the money, is Jim Ratcliffe Ineos owner, is he owner of football team yet? I got a sneaking suspicion I feel that Ineos, you know, they've got a big presence obviously in cycling and a massive presence in Formula One, big part of the Mercedes
sailing
Formula
as well.
One team, sailing. He's British. He definitely would have the funds. I think he's tens of billions. So maybe, I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point, but It's a huge move. You know, he bought it, I think it was 2004, 2005. Obviously, Mourinho came in. That was the special one era where he had this incredible squad. I think he conceded something like 14 goals in a season. An absolutely amazing squad. Another squad perhaps in the hat for, you know, best Prem ever. But it's changing the shape of the Premier League yet again. Newcastle, new owners, Liverpool's owners only in the last week have said that they're looking to buy another football club and follow in the footsteps of Red Bull's, you know, the Red Bull family. So, yeah, constant shifts. Very, very interesting, Si.
Yeah, I mean, going off what you were saying about American owners as well, they have a very, you know, mixed reputation within British sport, for good reason, really, because if you look at a lot of American owners of British teams, a lot of them tend to run it with the American model of profit-based, whereas obviously for Sheikh Mansour and for Roman Abramovich, it was more about almost a vanity project of making that team the best in the world. So possibly something to be aware of for Chelsea fans. But yeah, going off what you were saying about the billion-dollar renovation, billion-pound renovation of Stamford Bridge, obviously a lot of people, a lot of potential buyers are also worried about the aspect of how the deal would get done, because of the fact that most Russian banks are currently being sanctioned by various governments throughout the world. There is, obviously, as you said, Abramovich's links to Putin. Although he has had a contentious relationship, he does have a relationship with him, and they have been seen in public together on multiple occasions. So it's a very, very interesting thing. And hopefully we'll get a bit more information in the next few weeks, because, it could be a situation where this is an amazing thing for Chelsea. Maybe they get bought by another Saudi consortium with millions and billions and billions of pounds to spend, or maybe they get bought by a potential billionaire who has, or collection of billionaires who have less money to spend, and therefore maybe Chelsea don't do as well out of it. So this is something that is going to be very interesting to see how it goes through and where we end up in the next few weeks.
It's I'm always very cynical when someone with £1 billion tries to say they're going to, you know, billions of dollars is or pounds, billions of monies, it turns around and says they're going to do something charitable. It doesn't fill me with warm feelings. And I think it's certainly been received with varied degrees of skepticism as to what victims of the war in Ukraine he's specifically talking about as well. So where that money will end up is, of course, yet to be seen. But suffice to say, he's certainly going to be given the space and time to do it and end up being fairly well off as a result of it happening and probably have no troubles going further in his life. But what I was also thinking was we could probably just ask our listeners to chuck in, I don't know, 50 to 100 million quid each, and we pick it up and have it as the Wednesday pod, like a, you know, a co.
I don't want Chelsea. I don't want Chelsea.
Community owned.
No, I don't want Chelsea at all. Yeah, I know.
Makes a lot of money, Ben.
I know, but you know, yeah, I'm
buy
a
you a new microphone.
Fan. I'm a Liverpool fan who well, maybe I'm not a diehard Liverpool fan because I forgo watching the Champions League games where we're 1-0 down.
I suspect $1 billion could change your mind.
Podcast. I don't know. I'm not worried about Abramovich's future. What I'm worried about is Chelsea fans' future. I don't think there'll be any change in the immediate time frame. So Tuchel will still be in charge. They'll still have this immensely deep squad and they'll still be able to possibly go on and challenge next year. These deals take months, years. We don't know what's going to happen. It's such a fluid time across the world, Si.
Yeah, and going off from what Dan said as well, I mean, if the viewers put in a billion each, then we probably have the 3 billion needed to buy Chelsea.
There it is.
Hey.
There it is. And we're all here.
Self-burn. It's a self-burn.
We're all here.
But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see going forward. Talking about Ratcliffe, you were talking about earlier as well. I believe he actually has bought, is it FC Lausanne? I think they're a Swiss team. And he also owns Nice as well in France. So he has got a market within football. Whether he's complained in the past about the expensive nature of British football teams, which is true, so whether he'd think about chucking in a few billion is yet to be seen.
Nice
to see you.
Oh, come on guys, keep up.
A football reference. Good one.
All right, yeah. Let's move on. Yeah, don't forget, if you've got anything you want to share about football, what's going on, because of course there's lots of football still happening, but the political ball is still very much in play. Do get in touch with us on Twitter or Instagram at Wednesday Pod on either. Gentlemen, we've reached that point in the show where we look ahead. Simon, I'm assuming we're going to gloss over anything you're looking forward to. Are you looking forward to something this week, Simon?
NFL free agency starts next week. So 14th is the legal tampering start, where basically all the deals get announced. And then the official start of the year is the 16th. So it's a bit of a farcical element of the NFL where everything's confirmed beforehand, but it starts on the 16th, even though it doesn't. It starts 2 days earlier. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And one other thing, I did want to mention the Combine very, very, very briefly, just to mention, because Ben wanted to ask me about a player to look out for. So Jordan Davis, 330-pound D-lineman for Georgia, ran 4.78 in the 40-yard dash.
Good Lord.
Which is actually 0.02 seconds faster than Patrick Mahomes, who was 100 pounds lighter. So some of these guys are built differently. So that's what I wanted to say. It has no relevance looking forward, but I just wanted to mention it. But yeah, NFL free agency is my big looking forward to thing. And obviously Villa play Leeds on Thursday and will beat Ted Lasso and put him further into a relegation quandary.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about how good Coutinho is looking at Villa. And it looks like Steven Gerrard has got the ball rolling a little bit for Villa. Jordan Davis, you are looking forward there because that's the draft, which we will look even further forward to. And I can't wait to listen again to the shutdown coverage because I want every listener to go and check online and look at Matt Eraser. I think that's how you say his name.
If it's not, then it should be, because that sounds cool.
Yeah, he is a punter. He kicks the ball like I've never seen anyone kick the ball before. It's actually remarkable. People saying he's the best punter in the history of the NFL draft. I don't know. I mean, they come up with this stuff. But yeah, Jordan Davis, didn't he break the record for his position in the 40-yard dash?
No, he didn't. He wasn't the fastest, but he... if you talk about weight adjusted, he probably was. So what they do, one of the things they do, all the advanced stats and advanced metrics mean that they look at how many pounds you're running from. Because obviously that really shows Patrick Mahomes didn't really have the best 40-yard dash because he is literally 100 pounds lighter than Jordan Davis. But I mean, Patrick Mahomes has gone on to have a pretty decent career. So maybe it's not the be all and end all, but you know, very, very amazing. I mean, the times in the combine were so badly done that we thought there'd been a combine record for the 40-yard dash, only for the time to be over 0.1 of a second out. So it's been a bit of an awkward time for the guy with the stopwatch, I'm afraid.
Hey, well, it's a bit crazy. Paul Mahomes, he's always the benchmark for slow runners, even though he's having like one of the great quarterback Hall of Fame careers, Dan.
You've got to have a fairly quick thumb for a 0.1 of a second, to be fair, to the
Don't give them excuses, Dan. They've got one job, man.
They've enough money. They could probably get a laser timer. Let's chip in. Let's buy the NFL a laser timer to put across their track and time it properly. We'll do that. Crowdsource, justgiving.com/NFL combine. There we go. Ben, Formula One. We're desperately looking forward to, as you mentioned at the top of the show, this week, Drive to Survive starts, of course. Like it or loathe it, it definitely signals that Formula One is mere moments from gracing our screens again. And to answer the question earlier on, it appears there are four circuits in talks to replace Russia. That is Turkey, Portugal, Malaysia and China. It looks like Malaysia and China would be favourable because of location, geography, and the, you know, where that fits into the moving about and stuff. But you know, equally, Portimao seems to be talked about a lot. I thought Turkey had already turned on their ticket booking system the other day. So who knows? Essentially, it could still be just about anywhere.
Yeah, I think Sepang, Malaysia, one of the great racing circuits, absolutely beautiful racing circuit. They just never really had the fans there, and obviously they got dropped, I think, at the end of Bernie Eccleston's reign. Formula One, less than 2 weeks away. Honestly, I'm so excited for it. This is a kind of the month of the year, the beginning of March, when a couple of things happen. First and foremost, the weather gets better. God, I hate the effing cold. Secondly, you start seeing some big sporting events come March, April, and then into the summer of sport. Obviously, we've got Formula One less than 2 seconds away. Champions League second legs currently ongoing. I'll let you watch the catch up with the results tomorrow. But Bayern Munich have smashed Salzburg, and Liverpool are making hard work of it. Obviously, we've got Champions League draw. Then we should hopefully have a couple of English clubs left in it. Golf, the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. First kind of real big event of the year for me, this. TPC Sawgrass, is one of the most beautiful golf courses, rather, not circuits, different sport, in the world. Absolutely stunning. And if you're a golf fan, tune into this, Si. Insulin-like with golf.
Yeah, it's what I was going to say. Do you think this is going to put me back in like with golf?
Honestly, if you watch it, it's absolutely beautiful. But yeah, if you do look out for the 16th hole, it's the, or maybe 17th, you'll see it. It's a par three onto an island. Absolutely beautiful. It can make or break the Players' Championship. Keep an eye out for Rory McIlroy coming in with really good form, good swing, good brain. I got a feeling he might snicker top five.
We always say this about McIlroy, though. We always put him in on a pedestal. It comes up to the big tournaments and then he ends up doing a massive wet fart in his plaid trousers.
So yeah, recently it's not gone so well. But listen, it's in my week ahead because there's not only that, we've also got England versus Ireland, Six Nations. Sunday, I might go to the pub for that one. That sounds like an absolute belter of a Sunday afternoon. And finally, the Cheltenham Festival starts in 6 days. Cheltenham Festival, next week, we're going to be talking about horses, Si.
I just want to say as well, I mentioned to a friend of mine, Blaine, was one of my best men at my wedding. We need to talk about rugby a little bit more. I have very little interest in rugby, but we are the multi-orgasm podcast, what we are these days. And therefore, we need to branch out. We need to talk about these other sports. Six Nations. It's blown wide open, man.
Yeah. Anyone can win it. So this Sunday, I'll talk about it on Tuesday. I'll give you a little game roundup. And I want to finish with something that I've actually just seen on Twitter maybe an hour or two ago. Seattle Seahawks obviously have lost Russell Wilson in a big trade. And they put a meme on their main Twitter page, which was the gif of Castaway when Tom Hanks is on his yacht screaming, "Wilson, where are you? Wilson, where are you?" I think that's Twitter gold. Yeah, Wilson.
I think that's Twitter gold.
Twitter's so much fun at the moment. I love that sports teams are actually getting involved with a bit of kind of like jokey kind of, you know, massive trade. And wow, amazing. Twitter's gold, right?
Yeah, it has its moments.
Good.
Si, what do you think of Twitter? You never on it, are you? You're not a fan.
I think Twitter is interesting, but it's also very dangerous. For a start, you can get very into it, and you could probably. I think I'd be one sort of person who just ends up being a scroller, like my wife is with TikTok. You'd never see me again, so that's the big worry. But on the other hand,
so
as well,
you mean dangerous to you in terms of like a time sink, not in terms of like there's dangerous stuff on there and misinformation.
I mean, there is exceedingly dangerous misinformation and stuff, but I'm talking more on a personal level. I mean, you know, that's where my head goes immediately is for my own self-preservation. And I think you should know that by now because you've known me for, what, 7 years? Seven?
The other day, there was a company that tracks misinformation and things around like COVID vaccine misinformation and stuff like that. And apparently the amount of tweets and hashtags around like COVID vaccine and stuff dropped off a cliff once Russia started invading Ukraine. It's a bit like their resources were sent to Ukraine instead of to the kind of computer farms where they were spreading misinformation. But yeah, it's quite stark apparently. Anyway, all right, well, that brings us tidily, well, not very tidily, towards the end of our multi-sports podcast, talking about the horrors again, sadly, but of course it is ever-present. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for that. We will be back on the next Wednesday, or the next last Wednesday of the week, even. Not the next Wednesday of the week, because there's only one each week, and we're on the last one. So all that's left to say is, I've been Dan.
I've been Simon.
And I've been Ben.
Until next last Wednesday of the week, be kind.